We present My Word. A panel game devised by Tony Schran and Edward J. Mason. And here to introduce the teams is John Julius Norwich.
Hello, everybody. Teams are Dillis Powell, Frank Muir, Anne Scott James, and Dennis Norden. And so we go straight into the first round, which probes the vocabularies of the two teams. Now then, Dennis, for 2 marks, what is the meaning of the following word? Ptisan. I'll spell it for you. P-T-I-S-A-N.
It's Greek, I would think, from the silent P, which is Greek, and or swimming vowels, again. Tisane is what people say when Miss Scott James enters a room. isn't tisane that French sort of archaic brew-up?
It's a concoction of either tea or herbs or...
Herb tea, isn't it fusion?
This isn't the same word, is it?
Actually, it is.
Oh.
I think we can give you one for that. It is indeed. It's an infusion, a nourishing concoction of very, very slightly medicinal qualities, like sort of verbena tea, something like that. It was originally barley water, but nowadays you can use it for almost anything. Dillis, can you please tell me the meaning of Siamaki? As I'm not absolutely certain how to pronounce it, I shall spell it for you. It is spelled S-C-I-A-M-A-C-H-Y. Siamaki, perhaps.
Well, I've been waiting a long time for somebody to ask me that. And now I'm not sure if I've got it right. I think it means a shadow fight. Greek skia, or sphere, which means shadow, and mahi, or whatever, which means fight. Shadow boxing, shadow fighting, a shadow fight.
And let nobody ever underestimate the value of a classical education, because this Lillis Powell has got it right. Siamaki is the action or process of shadow boxing, of indulgence in a sham fight for purposes of recreation or exercise. Frank.
Homunculus.
Yes.
Oh. It's a lovely medieval concept, isn't it, that it is possible to construct, or there are in our bodies, tiny little people. A mannequin, dwarf.
A mannequin, dwarf, midget, pygmy. Perfectly right. A tiny person is exactly what homuncle means. 2 marks, once more. Anne, dear, could you kindly define to me the word empirical?
It's nearly always used sort of in the phrase with judgment, isn't it, really, to judge it on empirical grounds. Or very often, which means to judge it not on theoretical grounds, but rather on practical grounds.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Practical grounds, trial and error, really. Being guided by the results of observation and experiment, rather than on any sort of highfalutin theories. Well done. I think that earns you 2 marks. Well, now, before we go into round two, here, Dennis and Frank, are the quotations that you were given for the last round. Dennis, your quotation is, "Tomorrow to fresh woods and pastures new," from Milton's Lycidas, as I'm sure I don't need to tell you. And Frank, your quotation is from Gilbert and Sullivan, or at least anyway from Gilbert, "A source of innocent merriment." We now have a round of poetical pairings. For 2 marks, Dennis, can you recite the lines or the verse from which the following two-word quotation has been extracted? I warn you, this is a tough one. Nominative case.
I think that's also to one's advantage to have, not in my case a classical education, but a, what they used to call on American radio shows, a semi-classical education. A mower amass, I love alas, like a cedar tall and slender. A cowslip's grace is her nominative case, and she's of the feminine gender.
Well done.
It was
a brilliant reply. You can't, I suppose, burst into a rousing chorus.
No, we used to have another one. When a mow a mass, I love a lass, a mass a mat, she's blind as a bat. And it went all the way through, and it got rather vulgar around about the third person plural.
The chorus, if you could have burst into it, rousing as it was, goes, Roram corum, sunt divorum, harum scarum divo, tag rag, merry derry, penny wigand, hat band, hic hoc horum, genitivo.
Yeah, we didn't.
The poem is, believe it or not, called An Agreeable Surprise, and it's by one John O'Keefe. Well done, 2 marks.
Just flogging a dead language.
Dillis, can you tell me from which poem are taken the 2 words, sunny Palestine?
I don't think I can.
Think of large numbers of people rowing like hell.
Rowing?
Rowing, yes.
Henry.
Oh.
Is it a regatta?
Even in greater numbers than they do at Henley.
Ah, it's a...
And all at once, in the same vessel.
The same vessel?
Ah, it's...
It's a galley.
Quincrying of Nineveh.
Doctor, it's cargoes. Maysfield.
Apes and sandalwood.
That's it. The apes and sandalwood. Yes. Quincrying of Nineveh from distant Ophir, rowing home to haven in sunny Palestine. With a cargo of ivory and apes and peacocks, sandalwood, cedarwood, and sweet white wine. Cargoes by John Masefield. Well done. Now then, Anne, can you please tell me from what poem the 2 words strange device are taken?
Well, a banner with a strange device occurs to me from Excelsior.
From Excelsior?
Yes.
Can you enlarge on that, like sort of giving me the author or anything?
Oh, by Longfellow.
Excelsior by Longfellow. Splendid. And can you give me by any chance...
No, not one of line before, but Dennis it? Norden on my left can.
The strays of night were falling fast when through a mountain something passed, a village passed, a youth who bore mid snow and ice a banner with a strange device.
Ben Travers, you know, the marvellous fast writer, wrote a story once in which he said that it was a... that Longfellow got it slightly wrong. In fact, it was the Excelsior Banana Company who'd employed this chap, and it was a banana with a strange device. Excelsior.
Frank, can you please identify the quotation, Woodbine Spices?
Yes. would I be Tennyson? The black bat night has flown.
And the first...
And I stand by the gate
punch.
Alone.
Yes.
And the woodbine spices are wafted abroad, and the roses smell and thingamy. It's come into the garden, Maud.
It's come into the garden,
Maud. Well, it's Maud, actually.
Maud, indeed. Come into the garden, Maud, by Alfred Lord Tennyson. You remember that marvellous answer to that poem, which used to be sung with great enthusiasm by Joyce Grenfell, which went, Maud's not coming into the garden... Flowers set her teeth on edge, and she's much too old for a stranglehold in a prickly privet hedge. You can stay till your arter is hardened, and sing to her as you may. Maud's not coming into the garden, 'cause she wasn't born yesterday. Well, now, on to a round of something in common. For 2 marks, Dennis, what do the following words, names, or phrases have in common? In this particular case, their names. Irene Forsyte, Amelia Dobbin, Queen Gertrude, and Bathsheba Oak.
Irene Forsythe was Soames, was the one that Soames Forsythe was dotty about all through the saga. Amelia Dobbin
Vanity Fair,
was Vanity, was Major Dobbin's wife in Vanity Fair. Bathsheba, the only Bathsheba I know is either one in the Bible or the one in Far From the Madding Crowd.
Yeah. Hmm. What's the other name?
It's called Bathsheba Oak, in fact.
Oak, yes. You say that as though that was meant to hand me...
Which means she
wasn't
the one in the Bible.
What was the fourth name?
Queen Gertrude is Hamlet.
Queen Gertrude was the other one.
Well, they're all married.
Yeah. Or what?
They're all married ladies.
Yes.
Oh. Irene Forsythe had that nice young architect who got killed off round about...
Perhaps they all cuckolded their husbands. How would that do?
Yes, that they did, didn't they? No, what about... I don't know about Bathsheba. I only saw the film about
it. I don't think she did. No, I'll tell you. I'll give you one, Mark. They were all literary ladies, and they all of them married twice.
Oh, that's good.
Oh.
One mark. Dennis, can you tell me what the following have in common? Suits, seasons, freedoms, just men, and cardinal points.
Suits,
seasons...
Freedoms,
just men, and cardinal points.
Four suits of cards, four just men.
Oh, four of each. And four just men, as you say.
Four just men. Well done.
Or he's a jolly good fellow.
Yeah. They're all associated in groups of four. Now then, Frank. Haw, H-A-W. Green, bull, chaff.
Finch.
Well done. I was going to say gold, but I hardly needed to. They're all prefixes attached to varieties of finches. Well done. Full mark. And Anne, we now come to you with William Porter, François Arouet, Marie-Louise de la Ramée, and Hector Monroe.
François what?
I know.
Arouet.
Yes.
A-R-O-U-E-T.
Two of them. I can find them. We'll work out the other two. They're what?
That sounds like Stendhal, is it?
No, it's Voltaire.
Which Arouet? Oh, of course, Arouet, that's right. Yeah. They're all pseudonyms, aren't they?
It's what Sam Custer used to call pseudonyms.
I thought it was the other way round. I thought Hector Munro was Porter called Starkey, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, H.H. Munro, wasn't it?
H.H. Munro was Starkey. Well,
William Porter was O. Henry. Named well after a chocolate bar.
Now, who's Marie-Louise, then? Marie-Louise, what's the other name?
Marie-Louise de la Ramée. R-A-M-E-E.
You know that?
We've got the other three, haven't we?
Got three.
We've got the other three. She was Ouida.
Oh, yes.
Now, a quick round of double definitions. For two marks, what single word can be defined by both the following definitions? Dennis. A jolly feasting excursion and... A culinary coagulation of lactic liquid.
Yogurt.
Yes, yogurt. A jolly feasting excursion. And is that galactic? Was it galactic or lactic?
No, it was simply lactic.
Lactic, yes. Lactic liquid, which we shall assume for purposes to be milk.
You know, you often say, do let's all go.
Do let's go out on a custard.
Exactly. Let's hire a coach and go on a custard.
What else does milk come into? Cream cheese?
Rennet. Oh, what's the stuff that you add rennet to and you get the... No, junket. Junket!
Junket, of course. And if I may say so about time, too. Well done, you've got it by the skin of your teeth. Dillis, a feathered harbinger of summer and an esophageal contraction. Swallow. Swallow is right. Well done.
I thought I was going to say thrush.
Unfortunately, we weren't asking you the question, thank you. But we are now. And the question is as follows. Socially sullen and a transatlantic single-seater horse-drawn carriage.
Buggy.
Buggy. No. It's not buggy. You know, it's a looking in there all alone, buggy. There's a...
Would you say he's got one of his buggy moods today?
Yes, you would, wouldn't you? There's an 18th century
one-person vehicle called a sulky in England. Mm. So where the US comes in, maybe they've nicked it from us. And not sulky is to be alone and broody, isn't it?
Sulky is the right answer, and buddy, you're perfectly right. Sulky means both socially sudden and a transatlantic single-seater horse-drawn carriage.
And buddy.
And you receive your 2 marks. Anne, dear, can you please tell me the consort of a Muslim sovereign and a seedless raisin?
Sultana.
Well done, Sultana is right. And so... and so we come to the last round and Dennis's and Frank's quotations. The marks, as usual, will be awarded on the length of the applause from the audience here in the theatre. And Dennis, your quotation, as I told you earlier, is... tomorrow to fresh woods and pastures new.
Well, without making too obvious a play for your sympathy, I do have to tell you that tonight I have been specially let out of custody for this broadcast. I was only allowed to be here on condition that A, I wouldn't use the privilege to make an escape attempt, and B, that the BBC officially undertook to deliver me back immediately the programme is over. Which just goes to show you how strict some of these health farms are these days. Mind you, like everybody else who's ever wound up inside one, I never really believed it could happen to me. Nevertheless, just a scant couple of weeks ago, there I was standing on a weighing machine in the commandant's office, and while he was looking through my dossier, he said to me, "You seem an educated man. What makes you do such things?" And I said, "It's just something inside me, I suppose, sir." I said, "All my life I've desired beautiful things." And he said, "What sort of beautiful things?" I said, "You know, roast potatoes, baked bean sandwiches, rice pudding with hot marmalade." He gazed down at what the scale was registering, and he said, "Look where it's got you." He said, "A hopeless addict." "And Bobby, when you walk out of here, I promise you one thing, you'll have kicked a habit the hard way. Cold turkey." And I said, "With hot chestnut stuffing." He sighed and turned to his chief dietitian, Nurse Duggan, the one we called the enforcer. And he said, "Book him. Block 11. Well, 13 days I've done there now, and I can tell you this, if you've never been at a health farm, you just never believe what happens to people there. Those inmates, or umcows as they're called, well, that's from the initials UMCOWS, standing for upper middle class overweight, they'll go to any lengths in their craving for calories. One middle-aged estate agent suddenly went berserk from hunger, and they caught him trying to inject raspberry ripple ice cream into a main artery. In the exercise yard, the incorrigible eaters on the outside, they may be solicitors, bank managers, marketing executives, but here they're just known as the heavy mob. And what they're made to do is stand there doing running on the spot for sometimes as long as 7-8 minutes. The only thing that sustains your sanity is that the sheer hunger keeps making you drop off to sleep. And in those hunger sleeps, you get the most fantastically sensual dreams. One night, I remember, I dreamt I was running barefoot through a field of fried chips. Now, I don't want to make this too much of a sob story, mainly because although I have to go back there tonight, actually not only am I due out tomorrow, but on the way here, my family managed to smuggle me a whole half carrot, inside which I found a note giving me the most stupendous good news. While I've been inside, 2 restaurants have opened in our high street. One is a French bistro whose dessert trolley stars a whipped cream meringue pudding that's so enormous the portions are served from a small forklift truck, while the other is an Italian trattoria which features not just the spaghetti, cannelloni, fettuccine and lasagna, but a brand new dish which combines all four of them. There's so many calories, apparently, it can only be counted on an eight-digit calculator. So, as I say, don't waste too much of your sympathies on me, because although it's back to diced turnip tonight, tomorrow to French puds and pastas new.
Well, Frank, now it's your innings with a source of innocent merriment.
Gilbert and Sullivan. My object most sublime I shall achieve in time, to make the punishment fit the crime, the punishment fit the crime, and let each prisoner pint and willingly represent a source of innocent merriment. Just extra marks, sir.
Absolutely none.
And that is the story of my life. I just don't seem to win anything. You see, I've lost the stories week after week, on my word. I've lost you the whole program. No. I got very, very sad the other evening, and I thought, I'm one of those people who never win anything. And I thought to myself, no, hang on, Frank. Steady, lad. Pick her up. You have won things. And I ran to the lower drawer in the loft of the old chest there where I kept my treasures. And by thunder, I have won things. And I was immediately, my resolve was stiffened. For instance, I won, when I was really quite young at Broadstairs, I went in for Uncle Mac's singing competition, Uncle Mac the Minstrel on Broadstairs Front. And I was six at the time, and I won first prize. It was a cup and saucer with God Bless the Prince of Wales printed on it. And I was so pleased, I fell off the edge and broke the cup. But never mind, it was a start. And then the church raffle, we had a local church raffle, because I was writing a serial story for the church magazine about some, I was about eight or nine, about these children who fell down a hollow tree trunk. Whatever became of hollow tree trunks? They don't exist anymore. And they discovered this passage and everything. And after three issues of the Parish Magazine, it went bust. It's 50 years ago, and it's the only instance I've ever known of a Parish Magazine go bust. But they had a raffle, and I won a quarter bottle of Italian wine, of vino. And I couldn't drink it. And I kept it away, and I still got it in my little drawer. And then, when I was 14, I won a spot prize at our local teenagers' dance. You know, we all lined up, and I had more spots than anybody else. And I got a bottle of Fulnana scent. Do you remember Fulnana scent? Two dots over the U, Fulnana and a hyphen. And it had a tremendously scent of Egypt when you took it. Stopper off. You got cashews as well. And I had this bottle of scent, which was about half an inch long and about an eighth of an inch wide. And that was in my little drawer. And then when I was about 16, I won a thing from the vicar. And the chap who pumped the church organ was off ill. So I thought I'd help. So I did the vicar a service, and afterwards he presented me with his mirror with an advertisement for stout on it. So I shoved it in my little drawer and forgot about it. And then when commercial television first started, they had a very silly kind of quiz game on with prizes, and the
those very primitive days, and those, you know, and the sound wasn't right, and I couldn't hear what the question master said. And he asked, who can tell us what is the difference between a joist and a girder? And I didn't quite hear it right, and I said, I can. Joist wrote Ulysses, and girder wrote Faust. And I failed to get the box and the keys to a fortune, and I got the booby prize, which was a mint with a hole in it. So you see, I have won things, and I'm not just a figure of fun. I've won indeed a cup and saucer without the cup, and a bottle of Italian vino, and a little phial of Fulnana scent, and a mirror advertising stout, and a mint with a hole in it. So, add it up, come in the words of Gilbert and Sullivan, a saucer, vino, scent, mirror, mint.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, according to your applause, Dennis wins the story this week, and it is you and Anne who are the overall winners. And so now, it's goodbye from Dennis Pearl, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norton.
In My Work, the chairman was John Julius Norwich. The questions were compiled by Peter Moore, and the program was produced by Tony Schrein.
You've been listening to My Word from the BBC, heard each week at this time. This is the WFMT Fine Arts Network.